Hi folks, so I'm James. I'm a solution architect with Red Hat. That means technical pre-sales guy. I'm a technical pre-sales guy for cloud and service providers here in EMEA. And so obviously I'm here looking after Microsoft. So I'm going to go through about a 45-minute presentation, a quick introduction to Red Hat. So I realize we're here at a Microsoft site. There are probably a few guys here that are Microsoft only, or just sort of just getting into the open source world, maybe just getting used to Red Hat. So a quick introduction to Red Hat. I'm going to throw a few things at you as well. Talk about some of our storage portfolio, cloud management portfolio. Talk about how you can move subscriptions across, and a little bit about the integrated support as well. So I'm going to throw a few things at you, and hopefully you find a few things that resonate, a few things that stick. But we're here, of course, to the end of the day, and feel free to come ask questions afterwards as well. So we said how the Microsoft and Red Hat partnership was strong. They're so strong, we are using each other's slides. I do slides at the last minute. Same slides, but that's okay, because I can add a few more bits in here as well. Let me just walk you through this. I know you're trying to read it all at the same time, but walk through me one at a time, and we'll get through the meat of this. So the Microsoft Red Hat partnership. First of all, we said we have integrated support services. Well, that's pretty easy to understand, but it means we've got Red Hat guys in each of the Microsoft support centers, and when you raise a ticket or an issue with any of the Red Hat products, that can go straight to a Red Hat guy. When you raise a ticket, it's a there's a first-class system that says we have a problem with the Red Hat product, we're going straight to Red Hat engineer. That is going to make it far quicker to get support on those products. It's going to make it far easier than having to go through lots of different layers and not backing off each of the vendors. It's just quicker support for yourselves. Second we have was just the most recently announced, just sort of last month or so, was .NET support as a first-class system on Red Hat Enterprise Linux and OpenShift. That's just really cool, because it means I can pick up a .NET application that's written in C#, VB.NET, any of these .NET languages, pick that up, and almost run it natively on Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Strange new world, right? We do the same thing on OpenShift as well. And this is where it starts to get really exciting, because I can pick up those .NET applications and run them on OpenShift. And OpenShift provides contained support for the enterprise. So I can make .NET applications for first-class systems inside containers, inside Docker. Without having to re-architect, without having to change languages, we really have to talk about hybrid environments now. In the middle, we've got the Red Hat products that support and certified on Microsoft Azure. So we've done the full stack certification, certifying RHEL running on Azure, but also Microsoft Windows running on OpenStack, and also running on Red Hat virtualization. The support that we talked about earlier, having the support guide in each other's support centers, also applies to this too. So if you've got a problem with Windows running on Red Hat virtualization, again, it's going to be a lot quicker to fix those support issues. We've also got the integration with CloudForms. Now, I appreciate that maybe not so many in the audience are familiar with CloudForms. I'll touch on it later on in the presentation. But CloudForms is Red Hat's cloud management platform. It's got integration points with things like Microsoft System Center and Operations Manager, but also integration points, of course, now with Azure too. What's really interesting is that the plugin for Azure, for CloudForms, is developed by Microsoft. Give you the confidence that Microsoft sees the importance as well as Red Hat of having a management platform that is co-engineered by both companies. And lastly, we have Microsoft joined the CCSP. CCSP is our Certified Cloud Service Provider Program. What this means is you can get Red Hat products on an hourly, daily, or monthly basis. Rather than having to consume an entire year subscription up front, again, you can spin up in Azure, run it, test something out, and destroy the machine again, the subscription ends. Okay? So that's the major part of the relationship. Like I say, as of last month, all of these points are available now today. I'm going to talk now a little bit more about Red Hat, instructions of Red Hat. Can I get a quick quick show of hands? Already a Red Hat customer today? Okay, two of you. Red Hat partners? One or two of you around? Okay, cool. So I think hopefully I've pitched at the right level for a lot of you who are new to Red Hat. So a quick introduction. A lot of people know Red Hat as a Linux company. And certainly that's true, because we were founded back in 1993, soon after Linux was the new thing. Linux was founded in 1992. So we've been around since the early days. And so again, it's easy to make that association between Red Hat being a Linux company. But as you can see, of our timeline over the last 10 years or so, Red Hat's made major acquisitions in middleware, in virtualization, in management, and in storage. Red Hat definitely is a Linux company, but nowadays we advertise ourselves as the enterprise open source company. I'll sort you through some of the major acquisitions 2006 was the first time that Red Hat became a two-product company with an acquisition of JBoss. JBoss Middleware, priced Java application platform, business rules, data virtualization, a whole bunch of pieces in the portfolio there. In 2009, we came to market with virtualization. That's based on KVM and QEM as a virtualization layer. And more recently, I have to say, microservices and storage, both in Ceph and in Gloucester. I'm sure you've both heard of those of you from the OpenStack world as well. In 2013, we also came to market with Red Hat's OpenStack platform. Quick facts about Red Hat. We're in the New York Stock Exchange and symbol RHT, S&P 500 company. We've got worldwide offices, this number keeps changing. 75 of them, over 75 offices in 35 different countries. When I joined Red Hat 5 years ago, we were 3,000 employees. 5 years later, we are now 9,500 employees. So we're scaling, we're growing quite large. Enterprises are certainly taking open source. So we are a technology company now of open source software across 5 or 6 major business units. They're showing the little rectangles up there. So of course we have the Linux OS, we have the platform. Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which is still relevant because it's the basis on which Red Hat builds many of its product offerings. But also we're pretty big in the middleware space, and then we have the JBoss middleware portfolio. So that's the application platform that can run Java applications. But as you see, there's offerings there in business rules management, in data virtualization, a bit similar with data grid, developer studio. So Red Hat's heavily invested in Java and the Java EE world. In the storage world, we have Gloucester Storage, scale-out, network-attached storage, and Ceph, scale-out, block-based storage. Both software-defined storage offerings, both built on top of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. In cloud management, we're going to talk about OpenShift and CloudVault as well. Of the product portfolio that I'm showing here today, the red ones that I have highlighted are the ones that are available on Azure. So you can go to Azure today, you can consume Red Hat Enterprise Linux directly from the marketplace. If you're using any of those products, or you want to use any of those products with Azure, purchase a normal direct subscription from Red Hat, and you can migrate them to Azure and get full support for those too. Well, that's what we call cloud access. I'll talk about that a bit later on. Okie dokie. So I'm going to come back to the slide. We're going to sort of pivot on this several times as I talk through some of the Red Hat portfolio and what we're doing with Azure. So how does Red Hat's business model work? Open source software is free stuff, right? As I like to explain to my mum, Red Hat's made $2 billion selling free stuff. She's like, what? That doesn't make sense. Free stuff, yes, but fundamentally the Red Hat software comes from the community. It all starts in the community. In the community we're talking about, with the community you can have a perception that sort of long, you know, guys with big beards, you know, coding away at night. So that's kind of the perception of open source in some respects. But nowadays in open source we have large organizations, large enterprises, contribution towards projects. Microsoft are a big contributor towards open source. IBM, Dell, the big OEMs. In every vertical we find big contributions towards open source. But this community has a few attributes that make it unsuitable for enterprise. This community is hectic. This community is releasing something very fast, concentrating on new feature, and getting the next piece out the door. This community is interested in the technology. And that's a great thing for innovation. It means we have some really innovative, really exciting open source projects. But when an enterprise wants to consume open source software from this community, they've got to think about a few things. The most obvious one being support. All right, it's very well going to get OpenStack because it sounds cool, it's both on open source, you can support a whole different load of OSs, it's a cloud OS, whatever. But an enterprise cares, how do I get support for this thing? That's the most obvious thing. If it goes wrong, yeah, I don't want to have my engineers up at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to fix issues like this. So support's the obvious part. Also, the life cycle is a really big thing. All of these open source projects move at different rates, different speeds, they release at different times throughout the year. And coordinating these as an enterprise, consuming each of the different bits, it easily becomes a full-time job for several people if you want to consume this in the enterprise. Enterprises like to have release cycles, like to have long-term support. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux is supported for 10 years by default, or 13 years with an add-on. That gives customers the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to choose RHEL as my platform today for things like financial trading, things like healthcare, and not have to worry that, you know, in a few years down the line, no one from the community would support it. That's one of the big values that Red Hat provides. sacrificed. We were different life cycles of different products. So Gloucester and Ceph were about 3 years. OpenStack, I think, is 3 or 4 years at the moment. So they vary per product. That's one of the big values that that brings to the table. So we have a whole bunch of community projects over here. And so these are, you know, sort of a million, a lot of projects there. Very few people go directly to the community to consume that software. Very few people, even end users, guys on the desktop, will go to GitHub and grab code, because it's just too much of a hassle. So there's kind of an intermediary. We call these distributions. If you come from Linux world, or if you're familiar with Linux, there's lots of different Linux distributions. There's Ubuntu, and of course, Red Hat and across Linux. A distribution is nothing more than a collection of software. And there's distributions around there for KVM, for virtualization, around Foreman, which is systems management, Fedora is another Linux OS, ManageIQ for cloud management platform, and so on. So distributions aggregate all of these open source projects into a consumable place. But these are still community distributions. These still have the same fundamental problems for the enterprise that the individual projects have. They move very fast, they concentrate on new releases, they concentrate mostly on technology. This is where Red Hat comes in. Red Hat's business model is to refine the open source, to refine the community projects into a format that's consumable for enterprise. We provide that support, we provide that lifecycle, and those are just two of the major benefits that go to Red Hat. I'll talk a few more of them later on as well. We have Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which is a distribution of Fedora, or it is a refined version of Fedora, Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization, Red Hat Atomic Host, etc., etc. Okay? These are still open source, which is important to point out. We have no intellectual property in the code. If Red Hat develops a feature, and when Red Hat develops fixes for security and that kind of stuff, we push all of the code back out to the community as well. This is really important. Okay. Right, so I hope you've got an idea of how Red Hat products are made up. So let me talk about Red Hat and Azure and how we work together here. So I already mentioned of the larger Red Hat portfolio, and we'll talk about a few of these products today. Those are the ones that are available on Azure, like Cloud Access. Cloud Access is a feature of a subscription which allows it to be moved into Azure anytime. And I've got a couple of slides on that later on, how you enable this. Just talk you through a few of these though. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux is a distribution of Linux designed for the enterprise, designed for servers. We won't see Enterprise Linux running on laptops, on mobile phones, or anything like that. We purely care about the server market. JBoss middleware is lightweight enterprise-grade middleware. Like I say, of the portfolio, there's many options there that fit the Java EE spec. OpenShift Enterprise, sorry, Red Hat. So OpenShift is Red Hat's container application platform. And I've got quite a few slides later on that talk about how OpenShift is built up and the various different components you need to consume containers in the enterprise. Everyone's heard of Docker, right? And everyone assumes, okay, I want to run containers in the enterprise, I just get this Docker thing and I'm ready to go. Probably find I need a few more bits than that. And that's what OpenShift brings to the party. Red Hat Cluster Storage, it's scale-out software-defined storage, mainly for file-based storage mechanisms. So it provides NFS, it provides Windows file sharing, and it's used for applications like Media Archival, and this sort of thing. We'll talk about that later on too. Red Hat Cloud Forms, to finish off, the Red Hat hybrid cloud management offering. Again, it integrates with things like System Center, Operations Management Suite, and of course integrates directly into Azure too. Okay? Cool, so let's dive into a few of the products. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, because I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with what Linux is and what Linux does. But from Red Hat side, we're committed to making Red Hat Enterprise Linux the same distribution, the same bits and bytes of code, whether you run it on physical, virtual, private, or public cloud. It's the same kernel, there's the same bits and bytes that you would run anywhere, and you can move that distribution and run it anywhere. In any environment that an enterprise is using. One of the big things we added to Red Hat Enterprise Linux 7 was support for containers. Everyone's heard of Docker containers and how they're changing application architectures, how application infrastructure is changing to support containers too. So Red Hat is committed to supporting containers as a bare part of the OS. And this is really important. A lot of people will say the OS is irrelevant nowadays. A lot of people will say, well, it's just an OS, I really care about my applications. Of course, every enterprise cares about the applications, they don't care about the bits and bytes used to run it. But Red Hat Enterprise Linux provides many of the building blocks used to support those applications. Okay. another team as well in Red Hat Magic League 7 that we released, event support for Windows Active Directory. So you can connect it straight to an AD server, literally one command, and you have an integrated username, password support sort of thing. We also had a major theme with Rails 7 was to streamline the configuration management, to streamline the configuration of a Linux machine. There's a lot of guys going towards the next update, so previously been Windows admins, and they're scared by the command line, don't have some of the skills to add into Rails machine. So we added some graphical tools into Rails to make it easier to manage. We added a service called Cockpit, which I'll show you later on in the demo, how to easily manage a Rails server running in Azure via a simple web interface. Okay, so we have Red Hat in the marketplace. Hopefully, I don't know if you can quite see the text from the back of the room, but it is Red Hat was Linux 6.8 and 7.2. We have overlapping life cycles for each major release of RHEL. So actually technically we support 5, 6, and 7 today. 5 is coming towards the end of life relatively soon. RHEL 6 has still got a few years to run, and RHEL 7 I think is sort of 8 years left in life cycle, so quite some time now. Okay? This is a base minimal version of RHEL. So this is very easy to pick up and use if you just want to play around with Linux, or if you're just running an application you don't care too much about your standard build. The marketplace is very great. It's great for getting up and running very quickly. However, if you've got your custom builds, got your own custom scripts, you've got your own procedures for building a machine, you can also do that fully supported from Red Hat and Microsoft. So if you make a build internally, you build your own virtual machine, you can install the Windows Azure agent onto that Realm machine and upload that into Azure, and you can assume that directly. That gives you the flexibility of customizing your own machine, and but still taking use of the Azure Compute Platform. I'll show you a little bit later on how to do that too. Okay, so quick and easy, getting Red Hat running in Azure today really is a few minutes. We'll click away at the marketplace. I'll show you this also in the lab. For those of you sticking around for the lab, it would be great to just show you the support process. But like I said, the support for Red Hat machines running in Azure is a first-class citizen. I've just shown you a screenshot of the Azure portal. I've got a new support request. Go to the basic section, and if you can see in the drop down, I don't know if you can see the text there, it says virtual machine running Red Hat. That's the key. That's the key that means that your support will go directly to a Red Hat guy based on the Microsoft Azure site to provide your support. Okay. In terms of what we support, standard break fix stuff. You've broken your machine, we'll help you fix it. You can also raise proactive support tickets. Raise tickets advising about architecture as well, Red Hat products and configuration. The scope of what you can raise the support ticket for is way beyond just normal break fix stuff. Okay. Right, Cloud Actors. I've mentioned this a couple of times. Maybe talk to a slide about this. So Cloud Actors is a feature of almost every enterprise subscription from Red Hat that allows you to move that subscription from on-premise into Azure. You can move that subscription, say if it's RHEL, Cluster Storage, or JBoss, move that subscription to Azure without having to raise a new purchase order, without having to raise an invoice, without having to go through the marketing, through the finance and approvals, that sort of thing. You just go to the Red Hat website, fill out a very simple form, just as you want to move the subscription into Azure. What this means is we will share the Red Hat machine images with you on Azure, and you can get up and running and use those existing subscriptions. There's a few different use cases for this. If you've over-provisioned your subscriptions for a year from Red Hat, let's say you bought 10 servers when you only needed 8 on-premise. You can move those extra 2 into Azure at any time. But if you're doing a lift and shift, if you're taking machines from your existing data center and moving those into Azure, you can also decommission the machines on site and move the subscriptions across at any time throughout your 1 year subscription. Okay. Cloud Access is enabled for pretty much every Red Hat product, like say RHEL, JBoss, Cluster, Ceph, etc. It's easy to move to cloud at any time. It's important, I didn't mention on the slide. In this case, when you move those subscriptions into Azure, the support relationship still stays with Red Hat. So if you were used to having a direct support relationship with Red Hat, if you prefer to call us, if you have a technical account manager or something like that, that can still stay the same too. Okay. So you don't have to go by the Azure portal for support in that respect. So what does this look like? Was this process for Cloud Access? So it's very simple. Purchase an eligible subscription from Red Hat. I've already mentioned several times which ones are eligible. But then you go to the simple website and then the Cloud Access page. This CloudAccess page provides you all the information I've just given you, and a little bit more, that explains what is involved in CloudAccess, what do you need to do. At the bottom of this page, when you've read through the sort of features and benefits of moving the subscription across, there's a simple form to fill out. The form literally asks you to log in with your Red Hat account, select the subscription you want to move across, or subscription type you want to move across, and how many of those you want to move. Submit the form, it literally takes 5 or 10 minutes, and at that point you're entitled then to use that subscription in Azure. Okay. We have co-branded web pages, so if you go to the Microsoft site, you can read their page about CloudAccess as well, but obviously the form then exists on our site to submit it. You can also, I mentioned as well before, you can also import your machine images into Azure. There's some good documentation on this, I think, in the next slide. There we are. So creating and uploading your own images. If you've got a pretty extensive knowledge base of Azure that subscribes, if you've got an existing image that's running on VMware, or that's running on Hyper-V, or running on Red Hat KVM, you can take those images, package them up, and move them into Azure. There's a few preparatory steps you need to do for that, like installing the Azure agent and configuring a few things, but they're all described in that knowledge base article. If you're like me and you prefer to consume information by video, then we've got a few videos of that knowledge base article that are talking through a tutorial you can follow along with that as well. But this doesn't just apply to Linux. This applies to pretty much every Red Hat product that's based on Linux as well. So things like JBoss, if you're running that on RHEL, you can move that across any time and convert those images. If you're running OpenShift, if you're running platforms, these are all built on Red Hat Enterprise Linux. So you can move those machines at any time into the cloud using pretty much the same process. Okay, so I'm back to this slide and I'm going to come back to this a few more times before I finish up. Quickly time check. Good. So let's talk a little bit more about the extra parts in the portfolio. I don't have any slides to talk about middleware at the moment because we don't really have an application development audience in front of us. Any questions about middleware, please feel free to come grab me on the break or at lunchtime. Let's touch on storage quickly. Storage is changing. Storage is changing pretty radically from having the large monolithic net apps and the VMCs of the world to all the software-defined storage. And this is where we find Glass will be useful. It used to be the case where you had users would go to storage admins whenever they want to provision storage. And if you've still got an organization like this today, then you'll be familiar with some of the pains of having to say, hey, we'll do a LUN configured, or I want to have a storage volume like this, or I want to change ISCOS or NFS, this sort of thing. You know, this kind of way of provisioning storage is pretty unnecessary in the modern world, if we go towards software-defined storage. Sometimes we're working through custom GUIs, we're working through some quirky drivers, we're working with like interfaces we don't use every day, and at the end of the day, storage is just like any other compute resource. Software-defined storage is a sort of change in this concept. Software-defined storage says, okay, if you've got a Linux machine with any sort of storage attached, any iSCSI, directly attached LUN, any local storage, provision that into a pool and make it easy to use and consume. Cluster storage takes that storage and provides it in a pool, and that pool can be provisioned out as NFS, as Windows file sharing, and also ClusterFS, the native protocol using the storage. We're moving towards a software-defined storage world, and most of these technologies are being built on Red Hat Enterprise Linux or various other Linux types. So what use case is going to solve with Red Hat storage or Red Hat cluster storage? Well, there's a few of them. I don't have my favorite reference up here, which is Pandora. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with Pandora, which is a US service. It's a streaming service, much like we've got Spotify here in a minute. Pandora serves all their music via Red Hat cluster storage. So a few use cases. As I said, it's time for scale out. So anytime you want to add any capacity to your storage domain, provision a new VM, and that VM on Azure, configure the Azure block storage, you've added capacity to the storage environment. We're no longer going to the days of having to provision new hard disks or provision new storage enclosures. This is just software-defined storage. You just provision a new VM, and off we go. As I said, it's built for scale out, and those are redundant as well. You configure that redundancy at separate levels, but if a VM dies, no problem, just spin up a new VM and add that back into the redundancy pool. Mm-hmm. One thing I didn't mention was it supports HDFS. Those you run in Hadoop, those you run in big analytics in the cloud. Also, we've got native support for those protocols too. Primary use cases are analytics, so obviously via Hadoop here. Enterprise file sharing, like I say, we support Windows file sharing for the Windows clients, NFS through Linux clients, and also rich media and archival configure things like data deduplication, replication, and this sort of thing as well. On the replication side, this is pretty interesting too, because it's just built on a Linux machine. You can configure a cluster environment that runs partly on-premise and partly in Azure. Cluster's got built-in support for Azure replication. You can recognize, okay, I've got lots of different Azure regions, lots of different latencies to those regions as well. It can configure either on a scheduled task to synchronize to those regions individually, or you can sync them as files written as well. So it's built-in support for, again, scale-out environments provisioned over several data centers. Okay, we're back to the slide again. Quickly talk about storage. I'm going to touch now a bit on platforms and OpenShift. Okay, so this is some of the really exciting stuff, I think. Although we don't have an application development sort of audience here today, anyone in IT is probably familiar with some of the changes that are going on with applications today. Several different trends, several different big trends that we're working through at the moment. We've all heard of things like DevOps, but I'll split this down into a few different concepts. First of all, we see development processes changing, and I'm sure none of us are still stuck in the 90s on the waterfall model. Anybody out there? No, good. We've all moved towards Agile, more to use Scrum, you know, using concepts like Kanban and that sort of thing. We've seen development teams changing in-house to adopt this sort of stuff. But over the last few years, of course, we've seen the emergence and the rise of DevOps. And I'm not going to sit here and give you yet another definition of DevOps, but certainly I would say we need different tools to support the way that people and processes are changing. Application architectures are changing. This is really exciting. We're moving away from monoliths, from big jar-ready applications, from big applications written in any language. We're breaking those down into different parts. Anyone who's following any software development conferences today is hearing things like Docker, is hearing things like containers, is hearing things like microservices, and it's already away we go. You know, we've gone to having big monoliths to end-tier architectures. You do right from our own, sort of, you know, front-end, middle architecture, application tier, database tier. Kind of splitting those up and think about microservices, think about composer applications totally differently to even that we were doing 5 years ago. Of course, we're deploying them to different environments. It used to be that we were deploying them to physical servers, and only recently, probably still are, a lot of people deploying to virtual machines running on VMware or Hyper-V inside their own environment. But the public cloud is where we want to be targeting, right? And the public cloud represents yet another computing environment, another one we have to manage. So this is why containers have been really interesting. Containers gives you that consistent format for running your applications, runs it on private cloud, or hybrid approach too. If we talk about application infrastructure, I just mentioned the last part. Here we're moving from private entities, we're moving to public cloud. So if we look at all this change in application development, if we look at the way applications are fundamentally changing. We could bundle this up and talk about it with concepts like DevOps. But we can recognize that there's new technology needed to support these changes. We bundle a lot of these concepts up in OpenShift. And I'm not suggesting you sort of try reading that right now, because I'd like to talk about some of these parts later on. But OpenShift bundles up a lot of these concepts, and again, makes them consumable for enterprise. And in here we have things like Docker and container support, but also we emphasize techniques like using agile approaches, like using public cloud environments as well. So built-in OpenShift is native support for Azure. Like I say, developers want to write applications, and they want to mess around with infrastructure. So they type OpenShift, then the OpenShift can run on-premise, in virtual machines, and in public cloud like Azure. Inside OpenShift is Docker for running containers, Kubernetes, I'm not sure many of you are familiar with that, Kubernetes is a container orchestration. And of course, this is all built on RHEL, all built on Red Hat and Linux. A lot of these technologies today are all built on Linux. If you're running JBoss, we have native support for JBoss, running inside containers, running inside OpenShift. But of course, now we have native support for running .NET applications. .NET applications running inside a container, again, fully supported by Red Hat, fully supported by Microsoft. Let me take you through the shelf a little bit, because I'm not expecting you to remember every component or even to understand every component. But an enterprise consuming containers today will very quickly realize that one or two containers at scale and support all these different languages, PHP, Python, .NET, Perl, etc., are very quickly going to have some management problems. they need more than just DACA. So at the fundamental level, we have this thing, we have Red Hat Enterprise Linux. We have a specialized distribution of Linux as well, called RHEL Atomic. I don't want to go into too much detail right now, but for what it's worth, Red Hat Atomic is an ephemeral ephemeral operating system. You can't make configuration management changes, and you can't store your own custom drivers, which are easily designed to spin up, host applications, and die again. Really taking this to the extreme, this idea of changing application architectures and hosting public and hosting microservices-based applications. We have the topic of automation, the cockpit. This is the management interface. So it's a fully web-based interface for management, making it far easier to administer an OpenShift environment and a container environment or from a web page. Rather than having to learn lots of different commands and sit around typing in the terminal and do this all from a web-based environment. Now, Atomic and containers implement their own networking, their own storage. Again, not too much time to go into all this right now. It's interesting to learn that, say, to support these different container environments, you should think about having a network of kind of storage on a massive scale. The first on top of this, we build many of the official components. So if I'm deploying containers, still need a service cache bot, I still need a way to do user authentication and permission checking. I still need a way to do deployment automation. Okay, so if I'm going to deploy containers into my environment, how do I integrate with things like Jenkins? How do I integrate with things like Visual Studio? So OpenShift brings a lot of these components to the table and provides the integrations so developers can do what developers want to do, that's write applications, not manage infrastructure. Okay? Like I say, don't want you to understand every component here right now, but just introduce the concept. If you want to be running containers, there's a lot more to it than just Docker. So a quick bullet slide of some of the value points of OpenShift. So built for cloud-native and traditional applications as well. Just because I've talked about some of the agile approaches and some of the microservices as well, doesn't mean that we can't put the monolithic applications into OpenShift too. There are some people doing some slightly crazy things, like putting Oracle databases inside containers. Not quite sure why you want to do that, but certainly it's possible. Certainly it's possible to put monolithic applications into OpenShift too. It gives you one consistent environment, one consistent platform, whether you're doing it in private data centers or in public cloud with Azure. Developers don't have to worry about inconsistency in environments. They get one stable API to use in every one of those environments, and then just get to run containers. OpenShift looks after the whole build lifecycle, or whole run lifecycle of the container. So OpenShift will look after the building process, we'll look after running that in production and scaling it to multiple environments. OpenShift will then know what's running inside those containers. That can be a real problem for enterprises when it comes to things like security. How do I know what's running inside my containers? A lot of management tooling is not adapted for that today. OpenShift will then look after decommissioning containers and keeping those containers in a registry as well, an enterprise registry of containers running in the environment. So there's quick value points for developers and the operations guys. OpenShift gives developers self-service, some support for multiple languages, automation, and the ability to collaborate more quickly together. On the operations side, we're talking about having standard-based environments and web scale, and having enterprise-grade applications. What we split into two here are the two different of those guys in the organization. Developers just want to write applications, operators guys just want to look after the environment, support those applications. If I have an enterprise today writing lots of different applications in lots of different languages, targeting lots of different environments, this very quickly becomes a headache for my operations guys. When I put those applications into standardized containers, the operations guys don't have to care if it's a PHP application or a .NET application they're deploying. They just deploy a container and they don't care about the innards of it. In terms of what we support today, it's support for languages, it's support for databases and development environments, that sort of thing. Here's a quick eye chart of various different read off those points yourself. Okay. Sorry for the developers. So quickly, the value of OpenShift. I've just literally just skimmed over it in 10 minutes. I'm just going to say I'm limited on time and just want to throw a few things at you in this presentation. But quickly, what's the value of OpenShift? It expedites that value to market because developers are supporting applications and applications are the lifeblood of the business. Enterprises are gaining their competitive advantage today especially in the applications that they're developing. We see this happening with, in all the sectors. So exploit your time to market and accelerate the application development. Again, put application developers back into the seats of what they do both. They do best, which is writing code and writing applications, not managing infrastructure. This also increases your operational efficiency. So now they have the operations guys, don't have to worry about what application type they're deploying. Is it PHP or Perl or Python? I should mention too. The operations guide just supplying containers, one standardized format, one standardized deployable, and they can deploy that in sort of any environment. OpenShift is a technology that enables DevOps. Just going to finish off quickly with CloudForms. Okay, it's not quite what I was expecting. You didn't render my slide properly, never mind. Okay, I find your challenge towards the end. CloudForms is Red Hat's cloud management platform. You should see on the slide a few points of the value about CloudForms. Like I say, it sits at the top of an application infrastructure. So CloudForms ties into your platforms, like System Center, like System Center Virtual Machine Management, Operations Management Suite. It ties into things like Azure, and also from other vendors too, Red Hat Virtualization, Red Hat OpenStack. From there, CloudForms builds a configuration management database, everything running in that environment. And CloudForms is very quickly able to answer, what do I have running in my environment? How many real machines do I have? How many Windows machines do I have? But across every different platform that I have running in my enterprise. We can connect to things like ESX, other cloud providers too. And this is a very quick tool to answer, what have I actually got running in my environment? But CloudForms goes beyond that. And the Meter CloudForms is a state machine. A state machine listens to events happening in the environment. So let's say I provision a new machine on Azure. CloudForms is notified of that. CloudForms can then take automation actions against that event. So if I create a machine on Azure, I could fire off a notification email with CloudForms. This is a very simple example. Something that's really interesting about CloudForms is it's totally agentless and connects directly to the APIs of these platforms. So CloudForms can connect directly to Azure and open up a machine. It can open up a disk image of the machine and see what's running inside it too. Because it's listened to these events in the environment, let's say the virtual machine's powered on, let's say it's a Linux server. A Linux server is powered on in Azure, CloudForms is notified. CloudForms can then take an automation action and say, okay, go open up the front of that machine and see what we've got. Again, it's going to find a file system, it's going to find various directories, and you can then walk that file system and say, let's look for the latest security vulnerability, let's look for Heartbeat or Shellshock or Google or something like that. CloudForms can then read the contents of that file system, and then say, okay, looks like you're vulnerable, and then just shut down that machine or stop it forever being provisioned. Very quick example of how you can use it for security. CloudForms can go way beyond that as well. So it can listen to events for when a machine is snapshotted, for when a machine is retired or something like that. CloudForms can build service catalogs and also provision new machines too. So I'll talk about some of the integration points with CloudForms specifically and Azure. And like I say, this is released as part of the partnership agreement back in last November. And the CloudForms plugin for Azure is developed by Microsoft guys. So you're using the same API that you would do, using the same API, of course, for Azure. And supports the core functionality for CloudForms. So what I just mentioned there was inventory. So it could inventory what's running in my Azure environment, how many machines have I got, how many resource groups have I got, network security groups, etc. Iterate all those in the configuration management database. We'll put those alongside your Hyper-V environment, we'll put those alongside Red Hat virtualization, OpenStack platform, and all those other things as well. You can iterate over all the regions and availability zones we have as well. And then do things like power operation, start, stop, machines. You can use for provisioning various different stacks. You can define a stack in platforms that can be provisioned to any of those environments. So not even a stack language specific to one cloud provider. You can use one stack that's then provisioned on-prem, public cloud, or a hybrid approach too. Recently announced as well is CloudForms support for containers. So CloudForms can connect to OpenShift or can connect to real machines that are running containers. They can look into your container environment and draw pretty pictures. We'll draw a reporting connection between the containers, between the users, the networks, and the storage being used in the environment. Like I say, management tooling for containers is still evolving. Containers are very new technology, and we're going to see management tooling a little bit more in the future too. Platforms can manage virtual machines and containers as first-class systems. Okay? There's way more than just virtual machine management, but it can manage containers too, for applications. Right, just coming towards the end now, I've just covered a few different things. I've thrown three different topics at you and talked about a few different Red Hat products. Talked to you a little about the Red Hat and Microsoft partnership announcement, and if you'd like to learn more, by all means, come and ask us questions during the break or at lunchtime too. If you're getting up to speed with Red Hat and want to learn more about the technical part, you want to learn more about Linux, plus or something else like that, you can purchase a Red Hat Learning subscription. Red Hat Learning subscription is a one-year subscription, just like any other Red Hat subscription for a product, but it's assigned to a specific person in that enterprise. I say, if you're developing your skills in Red Hat, developing your skills in open source, you can get access to over 100 days worth of content and over 40 courses, all delivered online. This is great if you've got one of those, like I say, got one of those managers who doesn't like you traveling, or if your schedule doesn't allow you to travel so much, or be a different size for training courses. Learn at your own pace, learn in your own time. There's over 300 videos, over 400 labs, and there's also an extended version of this subscription as well that allows you to validate your learning with your experience and expertise with an exam. So you can gain Red Hat exams through the learning subscription. This is far easier and better than just targeting one specific technology. So if you want to learn a little more about Red Hat and open source generally. I know I've shown this slide before, just to remind you, the last few points of the Red Hat and Microsoft partnership before I finish off and hand back over for the next session. Integrated support, Red Hat guys, and the Microsoft site. .NET support on Linux and inside containers via OpenShift. Red Hat products supported on Azure, and also Microsoft and Microsoft Windows supported in Red Hat virtualization and Red Hat OpenStack platform. Management tooling, integration with CloudForms to Azure, into System Center, and Tiger V, and various other clients too. And finally as well, Microsoft Azure has joined the Red Hat Certified Cloud and Service Provider program, meaning you can consume Red Hat and Linux and a few other products too, on an hourly, daily, or monthly basis. Cool, that's a summary. So a few links you can take a picture of quickly if you're looking for a few links around. I'll be around until the end of the day, so we'll rate it over here. Anything technical, come to me. And thank you very much. Cheers.